listening to the New Mamas Podcast. Hey, everyone, it's your host, Lena. And today I have Brooke on with me today to tell her story about having HELP syndrome. That's HELP with two L's, preeclampsia, and her emergency C-section. For those of you who don't know, because I know I didn't, HELP syndrome stands for, and I'm going to butcher this, hemolysis, elevated liver enzymes, low platelet count. So there's a lot going on there, and I'm sure Brooke will help break it down. Basically, it's a serious complication of high blood pressure during pregnancy. Brooke, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit more. Yay, hello. Tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 24 years old. I live in Wisconsin. My daughter is 10 months old right now. And I think as far as like about me, I'm just a very creative person. So whether that's like writing, videography, drawing, I've pretty much dabbled in a lot of things and it's been really fun to just do that. Yeah. And then I've also been teaching and teaching 3K and I'm a nanny. So I heard that you used to be a nanny as well. So I've been working with kids for the past 7 years. So being a mom was just something that in a lot of ways came natural to me and was super exciting.
Yes, I used to nanny. It was honestly, but it was really fun. Like I think I was still in college and I think one family I nanny for, the ages were 9, 12 or 9, 10 and 14, something like that. And it was fun. Like I kind of can't believe it that the mom left to go to Europe, I think for work or something. And I just like lived at her house for a week and a half. And I was like, really? I can't, how do you trust me? I'm like 20 years old with your like three kids. Like there was a lot of trust, but.
Totally. It's like beautiful as the nanny to have that trust, but also like I, as a mom, like I have a hard time with the trust. So it's really both sides.
Right. It's like now as a mom, you're like, what?
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like, so the mom that like I would have complained at about probably like I've had to check myself sometimes because I struggle to like go out and do my own thing because I don't know. I just do. And even though I've like been on the other side, it's still really hard for me to like let go.
Same.
Which I think is another kind of theme in like my story is just like the control element and like feeling out of control is something that I definitely deal with.
Yes. Okay. And also we are pretty similar. Like I'm also creative and I love to just dabble in a bunch of different things. So it's like cool to hear that.
Yeah, I was listening to kind of some of the different things. I'm like, that's weirdly similar. Like a lot of the different like social media, like I had a YouTube channel and I actually.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, I gained like 20,000 subscribers at the
time. Girl, that's a lot.
It was. And then I abandoned it because ADHD is really fun. And also, I also kind of moved forward in my life and I was trying to figure out like what I needed. And like, I think you've talked about like, you know, feeling like almost like you're living for the camera. And I was like, yes. You know, I feel like I just need to take a break. I'm in early 20s. Like, let's figure out like what I need to do. And that's when I started nannying and working in childcare and just trying to figure out like, you know, my place in this world.
Yeah. I love to hear that. It's so true. Like, yeah. Were you like a vlogger?
Yeah. I did vlogs and like lifestyle. It was kind of in like the beauty guru, but not world of things where I would like do like hauls. And I think I started when I was like 15. So it was kind of a wild experience because I was very shy and I was, you know what, I want to do my thing. And I want to like vocalize my non-social anxiety parts of me. And so it was a really cool like place to have that. It was a really, honestly, I feel like I'm so grateful for that experience because it's really helped me to like let go of the fear of judgment. It's scary to put yourself up.
Yeah, you get over yourself real quick when you're in front of the camera and you have people commenting and like, I don't know, you just end up not caring anymore. And it's like the best feeling to not care.
Yes, I'm definitely still working on it. Like there are times when I'm like, oh, I so don't care about anybody and anything. And then I'm like, I care about everybody's opinions.
Yes, it's like a fine line to walk.
Totally.
Well, I love learning more about you. So then let's get into pregnancy. So you mentioned you had a fairly normal pregnancy up until 19 weeks. That feels early. I mean, it's halfway. That feels early. Like what happened?
So it's funny because like, I don't know, but I do. So basically I struck a fever And like, I couldn't keep anything down. It was to the point where like, it was alarming because I'm somebody who like, I've always been able to tell like when I need to vomit and like, I can always make it. Like growing up, I've really never been the kid that like had those accidents unless I was like really nervous and like didn't want to get up. But I was vomiting so much and in so much pain that like I couldn't even make it to the bathroom. That was when I was telling my husband, I'm like, I need to go to the hospital or something. Like, I don't know what's going on with me. Like, I could not function. So we ended up going to the hospital and they found out that I had a kidney infection and also had COVID. So it was what? Like a fun little mixture of pregnancy, COVID, and a kidney infection. I don't know if the kidney infection has anything to do with the HELLP syndrome or preeclampsia, but it was so bizarre. The urologist was, what did he say to me? He kind of said like, yeah, it's really early. Usually this happens a little bit later. And I'm 5'1", I'm very short. And so it essentially like, when the uterus and the bladder and all of those things grow and you don't have as much room down there, you can get things infected. So I had a really high white blood cell count. I was in the hospital for like 3 to 4 days. Like it was a long time. And I was by myself because of COVID. So like the most strange. And then my husband also had COVID. So nobody was allowed to come in. It was like straight out of a movie, like, because one of the nurses, he was such a nice guy, but oh my gosh. So he would wear his whole outfit and he'd come in and he would do his thing, check my blood pressure, make sure I was, you know, not like that I was okay. And there was one time, it was kind of a funny story where he's like, oh yeah, I saw that your heart rate went up. So I figured you were awake. So I came in here to make sure that I would check you while you were awake versus asleep. And I was like, okay, like very interesting. It was like in the middle of the night. Yeah. So what happened? So basically they, you know, kept me for a few days and things sort of like my white blood cell count went down. Everything started to act normal. And then for the rest of my pregnancy, things were in theory normal. I didn't really notice anything after that. To this day, I wonder like if maybe they did some more tests or were more proactive with me, maybe we would have figured out that there was something else going on that could have helped my circumstances later. But yeah, that was the fun 19-week pregnant moment.
But that was like almost like a red, like it was throwing up a flag of like, okay, that's weird. Because also a kidney infection, like did you have like any UTI symptoms before that?
I don't believe so. You know,
no, you would know. It's so painful.
Yeah. When you work with kids, like you don't always get to the bathroom. And so I just was so used to holding it in that like throughout my day, maybe I like accidentally, that's my theory. I'm not a medical person, but my theory is just like, I don't always go. And I, even being pregnant at that stage, I would sometimes wait hours before I would go. And I think that gave me like two things. It made me use the bathroom and like not care and just put the kids in safe spots and go to the bathroom. And I think it also allowed me to really listen to my body, which then further helped me later on.
Okay. That's so interesting. And also what a double whammy. You're like, because COVID too is so weird. Like sometimes you don't have symptoms, like you're not like sick. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know like what was pregnancy with the COVID, with the kidney, what was the kidney with the pregnant? Like, I don't know what the symptoms, like which ones were which, but at the end of the day, like it was so strange. And even the urologist was like, yeah, your case is really hard because like you're pregnant, you have this infection and you have COVID. So it's really hard to figure you out. And I was like, okay, you know, I guess, sure, that I'll take that. But at least I, you know, ended up being okay. And we figured that out after that. And everything seems somewhat normal afterwards. So grateful for them. But also, man, I wanted to leave so bad. I felt like so strange being in the hospital for that long because I'd never been in the hospital before.
It's so, I just had a girl on yesterday. I was talking to her and she was in hospital for a month, like a month long. I'm like, because same thing, like when I was in, without even when I was in the hospital for delivery, we were there for maybe 4 or 5 days. And I was like, at the end of it, I'm like, I had enough. I want to leave. I need to leave. Like, I was freaking out. Like, it's so hard.
Especially like, I think even like, this is kind of more of a controversial side of things, but like financially, you're kind of like, oh,
that too.
Like, I want to go home because I'm just making this more expensive for me later. Even though like,
dude, it's so true.
They wanted me to stay so badly because I basically begged them to go home. And I'd feel okay for like the first 45 minutes. And then I would basically, the only way to feel okay was to sleep. So, I mean, wow. I'm really glad that I did go, and I was still barely keeping things down at the hospital and could barely even finish like a half of a sandwich there, which, by the way, hospital food is awful too. So it was hard to eat the food there, but also like I needed the food to like help nourish my body. And you know, I was pregnant. So I needed that food to help me not feel awful.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Like each additional day is like racks up the cost as well.
Yeah.
So then when did you first start feeling the symptoms of HELLP syndrome? Like, were you further into your pregnancy?
I was probably a day before I gave birth was when I started noticing symptoms. Well, there are a few little things, again, now, like looking back, having known a little bit more about like what was going on with me. So I went to an appointment, my normal appointment. I think I was about 36 weeks pregnant, 37 weeks pregnant. That's still a little bit blurry because my cycles were so strange that I, you know, not sure how far along I was, but it was between those two. And basically what happened was I went in there and they weighed me, and I had gained like a lot more weight than I expected. And that was the first time where I was, because I do struggle with body image issues. It was kind of the first time where I was like, ooh, that's a little bit more. And I was so swollen, but I assumed, okay, like pregnancy swelling, this must be normal. And she kind of had like some weird comments about, you know, me being in a smaller frame and how, you know, I didn't really look that pregnant, which was weird coming from an OB, I feel like.
Wait, hold on. What?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. Like I did, like at the time I was like, okay, this is an interesting compliment and a strange comment coming from my OB, but like, okay, sure. I don't know. It was really strange. I feel like that alone kind of should have given me some red flags, because I feel like they shouldn't share that information.
That's like so weird. Like that's like so weird to say to someone who's, I don't know.
It's
Totally.
I think to anybody really, like, I feel like you just shouldn't really comment on it outside of health related reasons. Right. It was really weird. So she looked at me and we took my blood pressure and it was elevated. Now, when I started with my pregnancy, I had really good blood pressure to the point where a nurse actually commented, you have really good blood pressure. So for it to be elevated should have been more of a red flag, I think, to both of them.
Oh, totally.
And then before I left, I had mentioned, you know, feeling kind of tired at the time, like, you know, she kind of said, you know, yeah, it's really hard at the end. And I was, you know, I was kind of like, okay, I guess so. I've never been pregnant before.
Right. Like, I don't know.
I left. I talked to the nurse and I was like, okay, I kind of feel like a little bit of pain when I pee. I forgot my urine sample. Can I like take one? And she's like, yeah, sure. Like you can quickly take one. And I'm so glad that I listened to like my weird gut feelings during this, because I went and took one and I gave it to them. And later, my OB checked it off, but there was some protein in my urine. Mm-hmm. So it was like the swelling, the weight gain, the tiredness, and the protein. I'm like, okay, this is, I feel like now looking back, I don't know why nothing was done. Cause I know friends who had slightly elevated blood pressure and their doctors kept them and monitored them. So the next day I had severe preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome, it would have been probably interesting to see what would have happened if they did do that. Like, would my situation have been different? I don't know. So I go to work, everything is fine. The next day though, I wake up with severe pain.
Where did you feel the pain?
I felt it like in my upper abdomen area. It was like to the point where I was like, okay, like maybe I shouldn't go in. And I told my husband, I was like, this was the first day that I was debating, and we kind of talked about it. And I decided, it was mostly me, I decided, you know, I'll just push through. So I send my boss a text and I say, hey guys, feeling kind of awful today. you know, I'll push my way through it. If I'm a little quieter, that's why. And I go in. And you know what's funny too, looking back, like when I got to my work the previous day after my appointment, I had a flat tire, which was like so bizarre. All these weird things kind of kept happening.
All like the little signs.
Yeah, like you should be home. You shouldn't be driving. You should like take care of yourself. So I don't know. I feel like if anybody takes anything from my story, it's listen to your body and your gut feelings. I text them and I get to work and everything's fine. I, for whatever reason, normally I'm the kind of person where if I'm working, I actually, like if I have something going on, I'm worse, but for whatever reason, it actually kind of helped. Mm-hmm. And then the pain kind of started to come back again as I was going to a family get together, which I feel like, again, I'm glad I went to this because this was also one of those like female camaraderie moments where all my aunts were together and just asking them advice. And so I went there. Me and my husband drove separately because we were both coming from work. And my aunt asked me, she's like, how are you doing? And I lied. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. And I told her, I'm like, wait, I'm totally lying. I'm actually in a lot of pain right now. And throughout the night, just things just got worse and worse. And we ended up leaving. And on my way to the house, I call my husband and I'm like, I feel like I need to call the doctor. Like, this is just, I don't know if this is back labor because it was kind of going towards my back area too.
And you're 36 weeks at this point, right? Like yeah. Just to confirm. Okay. So you're still like 4-ish weeks out from your tech, like due date.
Yeah. So I, you know, that's kind of where I wasn't sure. And even talking to like my dad at the party, he made like a totally dad thing where he was like, I bet you're going to have the baby in 2 weeks. And I'm like, Dad, I'm in so much pain right now. I hope it's sooner than 2 weeks. Like I wasn't thinking about my due date at that moment. I was just so much pain. And then my sister chimes in and she's like, you're going to be the 41 weeks mom. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
Oh, how wrong they are.
Totally.
OMG.
So I call the doctor because my husband and I both kind of decided, let's just give him a call. And we ended up deciding to grab our bags because I was prepared and I had all of our stuff.
Good for you, girl.
Yeah. Normally I'm like a last minute kind of person. And this time around, I was like, you know, let's be prepared. Let's prepare for all of the things.
Again, so, that gut, that like instinct.
Yes.
Wow.
And so we drive there. We have all of like literally pillows, even like we have all of our stuff. We go there and I'm getting in the elevator. We meet with a nurse. And the nurse goes to me, and this is kind of funny too, like again, looking back, she goes, I'm really glad that you came in just like what you were saying. I just had this feeling. So I'm really glad to see you. I sit in there and they take my blood pressure. They do all the different things and they shuffle around and it kind of gets a little bit more, the energy kind of shifts and everybody kind of goes a little faster and I'm kind of like just there and I feel finally like semi-decent because they gave me some kind of medicine.
Uh-huh.
And look over to my husband and I say, you know, I should probably text my boss. And then the nurse chimes in. She's like, oh, you're definitely not going to work tomorrow. And I was like, okay. And so my husband texts my boss for me, letting them know. And so a lady comes in and she comes in with like so much power and force. And she looks at me and she's like, okay, so we're getting this baby out of you within the next 24 hours. And I was initially super excited because like I heard baby out of me, I get to meet my baby. I didn't hear like, oh, this isn't okay.
Right. That's so funny. Your brain went like positive, like, oh, totally. I get to meet my baby. Yay.
Which is so weird. I feel like I'm glad that that happened. My brain was excited versus scared, but I was kind of like, I just knew this was game mode. Like I just had to like push through these moments and just like, you know, do what I needed to do. I think again, like my experience in the hospital before probably helped prep me for this situation. So I'm like, I don't want to say that I'm grateful for it, but I might be. I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay to be great. I mean, it's okay to be grateful for it. Like that's okay. So they say we were getting this, but did they take the time to explain why?
So yeah, so she kind of, I don't know. I don't know if they really explained. There were some time points in the experience where they kind of explained a little bit more. She told me you have preeclampsia and she said, you know, we're going to put you on magnesium. I'm going to talk with some of the other doctors to kind of see like if we want you to be moving, if we want to have you on what is it called? It's not a stent. It's the one that the catheter.
Oof, and so, yeah.
Yeah. So they kind of had to figure that out. And she looked at me. She's like, so what's your birth plan? And I was like, well.
You're like, not this?
Not this at all. I was the crazy maniac who wanted to like do everything all natural. Like to the point where I would watch natural birth vlog after natural birth vlog after like I was obsessed with like having a natural birth because in my family, a lot of the women did and I was able to watch my sister do it. And so like this was something.
Wow.
It was a huge deal for me, like to the point of like some people dream about their weddings. I dreamt about having a natural birth.
Wow.
I don't know, but that was what I've always wanted, strangely enough, just to feel that empowerment. And I don't know, it was just something I've always wanted to be able to experience. I knew it would suck. Like I wasn't naive to that, but just the wanting of it was something that I just couldn't really shake. And so I was like, you know, if I'm like, that's my plan, but I know this is very different. I was just very open to whatever needed to happen for me to just stay okay. And I told her, I'm like, yeah, if we need to do anything else, that's fine. But like, I just want to be able to have skin to skin and to, you know, that was my main goal at that point. And so they put me on the Pitocin, they wheel me over to a different room and they kind of changed their mind on the magnesium. I think the more that they kept seeing my like blood and all of that, the more they were like, okay, she cannot move. So they didn't even want me to move because of risk of fall and seizures because magnesium like really takes you out. And like the night kind of goes fine. Like me and my husband are just trying to sleep because I knew like with being induced, like it can take forever. And my mindset was just in that realm of this could be who knows how long, 48 hours. I don't know. It could be even more.
Okay. So at this point, there was no talk about C-section. It was, it was getting induced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So in the morning, they take my blood again. And then somebody comes in and breaks my water, which I was okay with. Cause at this point I was just like, my mindset was whatever needs to happen to make sure that like things are okay. And for me to, you know, do what I need to do. I was totally okay with that kind of an intervention. And so I was able to kind of feel the contractions and I felt like as crazy as it sounds, I felt very empowered because I brought like, this is the crunchiest thing I've ever done, but I brought like a rose quartz crystal with me and I was like squeezing it like as the contractions were happening. And like, I just felt like scared, but I felt in control in some ways, which is weird because I wasn't.
I'm so here for that.
Yeah. Like I was like, you know, if I'm going to control anything, it's this crystal in my hand.
It's funny because I'm like not crunchy. I'm like scrunchy. What's the one that's in the middle?
I'm in the middle. I don't know. I feel like I don't know the specific like terms, but I'm like somewhere in the middle where I have cloth diapers. I don't always use them. I'm willing to give my kid ice cream, but I'm also weird about the dyes.
Me too. I'm like, I'm like, I have crunchy tendencies.
Totally.
Wait, but that's actually kind of cool. So you brought this like crystal and it like just helped ground you, like just the process of it helped ground you. That's great.
I feel like it did. And then we had like an oil diffuser.
Love
and
it.
Like I was really prepared to have this like natural hippie labor.
I love it.
So I had all of the things for it and I had some music going just to try to calm myself down a little bit. My OB comes in and she, mind you, how do I explain her? So she's kind of the person where you kind of know when a nurse is or doctor or any like medical professional kind of is checked out. Like, I don't know what it's like to be in their shoes, but they're kind of like typically, you know, you're more of like a patient in and out kind of thing. More transactional is probably the best word for it.
Yeah.
She came in with like all of the focus and determination in the world. And she looks at me and she's like, you are very sick right now. And she says, like, she's like, I haven't seen a case like this in 10 years or so. It was more than 10. She was very concerned. And she's like, you need to come up with a plan. Your platelet levels are really low right now. I think they were at a 74. If anybody knows anything about medical situations, that's awful. It's like not good at all. She's like, they're dropping right now pretty rapidly. She's like, we need to kind of figure this out. So it's a little blurry, but I'll do my best to try to explain it.
Hold on. Really? Let me pause really quick. So you mentioned your platelet count was set 74, like 74,000 or 74?
74. I don't know if that translates to something else I'm not sure, but that's what it says. Because I looked at my medical records recently and I saw that.
Oh, smart. Well, so I just Googled it. A normal platelet count in adults ranges from 150,000 to 450,000. So either way, yes, your platelet count was like super low.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's wow. That's interesting. So she came in and she said, you're very sick. And she started to explain why. Okay.
Yeah. So this is kind of where the why and more of what was going on. Because at this point, I just assumed preeclampsia. Mm-hmm. And so she said that I had preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome, they're not trifecta, but the two together. And she said, we have a few options. She looks at me and she's like, you're not dilating super quickly right now. She's like, if I knew that you would dilate to a 10 in the next 4 hours, I would feel confident and comfortable going that route. She's like, but we risk a lot of things. So if we want to do an epidural, I don't even know if we're able to do one right now because of the clotting, which again, was something right. I was okay with in theory. What else did she say? She said that, oh my goodness, what did she say to me? She said a lot of things that were just very medical and very scary. And she told me like one of the things with the emergency C-section at that time is that like, again, with the clotting and you could risk hemorrhaging, which was another problematic issue with not having enough like blood and healthy blood cells in both ends to help you stay okay. So she says we can do a few things. We can keep trying what we're doing right now. Or she's like, I feel like this would be almost the safest route where we just do a C-section, get the baby out of you, get you back to a healthy spot. And I just knew like C-section for sure. Like I didn't really want to decide something that could potentially be even worse. But then she looks at me and she says, we'll have to put you under. So I wouldn't have been able to be awake for it.
Was there a reason why?
I think it was the platelet count was probably the reason why. I wish I would have asked, but I think that's why. I think the situation was so severe that they just wanted to do that route.
Yeah, maybe it's like faster, or maybe it's less. I don't know. Yeah, I was just so curious to understand. So then how did you feel about that?
My biggest concern was, or I had two concerns. Number one, they always talk about the happy hour, the golden hour of love where you have the baby. And that was like the only thing, because anytime anybody had any sort of new information, I was like, will I be able to hold her right away? Will I be able to hold her right away? Like that was all that was on my mind at that point, because I really, really, really wanted to breastfeed. And I have been, which is like a success in this situation. But that was like all I had left to like control was the fact that she was my baby and needed to be on me. And like, I wanted to make sure I had something out of this situation that was somewhat what I wanted. And then of course my husband wasn't able to be in the room. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I think it hit me really pretty heavy when I realized they probably didn't have him in there, because if something were to happen to me or the baby, they can't have some like husband losing their mind while they're trying to do their jobs and make sure that they can keep us safe. And I think that's when it really hit me, like just how serious my situation was, because the medicine that I was taking was just very like exhausting that I really didn't have time to like process that it was scary. I was just trying to like, again, listen to my body and really just trust my gut. I didn't really have like that little anxiety worm going through me other than I just want to hold my baby. That was really the only few thoughts. It was very primal in that way. So they wheel me in to the C-section room without Travis, my husband, and they kind of put me under. It was a giant room. I felt like so small in this huge room with by myself without my husband. And I just was like, this is happening. Like this is happening. And let's just hope that I wake up. And so I wake up and of course I'm out of it because I was on, you know, the anesthesia, and they kind of let me know. My OB says, what did she say to me? She says, so baby had kind of a hard time breathing when this happened. So we kind of had to put her on oxygen. She's in the nursery right now. Your uterus flipped. I don't know what that means still, but my uterus flipped inside out.
What? Yeah.
Hey everyone, it's your host, Lena Forrestal, taking a quick break from this podcast episode to ask you to support the show. I do this show because I love it, and as a self-funded creator, your support can help me pay for things like podcast hosting and an editor. So here's how you can help. Share this episode with a mom friend, caretaker, or soon-to-be mom friend. Leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you wanted to throw me some coins, you can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Any little bit helps, and I appreciate your support. Finally, give me a follow on Instagram at Lena Forrestal. I love meeting my listeners, so definitely send me a DM and introduce yourself. Now, let's get back to the show.
It was like my body was like, any complication, let's just check all of the different ones.
Wait, I'm literally Googling it right now. What does it mean when your uterus flips? A retroverted uterus means the uterus is tipped backwards so that it aims towards the rectum instead of forward towards the belly. Some women may experience symptoms. Oh, I guess it can happen anytime. I don't know. I don't think this is right, but that's crazy. Sounds crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, so she looked at me and said those things. And on my way over, they wheel me past the nursery. And so like, I see my husband and I see the baby in like the little spot that she was in. And I'm like emotional and, you know, obviously very out of it. And I just thought she was so beautiful. And they kind of continued to wheel me back. And I was just glad to see them two together. I think he really thinks it's very special that out of the situation, he was the first one to get to see her and hold her. And that doesn't happen. And so I think I'm glad that she was able to be with one of us at that moment. And so they kind of have me wake up and gain consciousness. And then they bring me into the room and I hold her. And it was like, that part was just magic as far as the whole situation goes, just being able to hold her and just really, honestly, hoard her. Like I think my husband finally got to like hold her officially after 2 hours, which was what I had planned for anyways, but I was just, I need this baby in my arms. My mom was able to come to the hospital, which was awesome. And everything started to kind of click together after that. I was like incredibly thirsty. I like had no idea how thirsty I would be after the situation. And her breathing slowed down, which was awesome. It got to a more normal spot when she was on me, which gave me that level of like assurance and confidence that like I feel like I needed during that moment.
Wow. That is all.
Yeah.
I got teary-eyed thinking about you getting wheeled past the nursery and like seeing your daughter and husband.
Totally. I'm getting a little, it was
like, oh man.
I didn't expect any of this. I just didn't. And I'm glad, like, again, looking back, I think I'm so grateful that I did not have any recollection of what happened to her when she came out, because I think I'd have been a maniac mess if that happened. Like, honestly, levels of anxiety that I've never experienced. I think I would have had all of that if I did see that happen. So again, when I'm looking back on like what happened for the better, I'm so glad that I was put under for that reason alone. I would have loved to have been there, seen my husband's reaction and experienced it, but because it was so traumatic, I'm just glad that I wasn't able to see any of it and only saw her when she was, you know, in safe and on me.
I can agree. I agree with you there. I think I would have panicked, like, for sure. I wonder. And then you're like, I think you're strapped to a table during the C-section. Like, if you're awake, I think you're like strapped to, I don't know. It just sounds. Actually, did you know in Thailand, they actually do put like the common procedure is a C-section where you're put under. Like, that's actually default. Yeah, it's very
interesting.
I know, it's so interesting how different countries do it, but Thai women prefer C-sections because they don't want to feel the pain of a vaginal birth. It's like truly fascinating, but
it's so fascinating. I know, I would love to like know about what every sort of medical system and the programs and all of that around the world. Because you find in America that like we have very little, we have very little information on our own and what we can do and very little resources. But then I feel like outside of that, like it's just wild to hear other stories and how it works around the world. Because we're all at the end of the day, we're women having babies.
Yes, right. Yeah, my friend was trying to give a natural, she was trying to have a natural birth, like a vaginal birth in Thailand. And she had a really hard time finding a practitioner that would work with her for it because a lot of them just aren't trained for that and they don't like recommend it. It's just like truly fascinating.
That is so weird.
Versus here in America, we like dream of this natural, very natural, no drugs. So we want to feel everything birth.
Totally. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, but wow, like what an experience. And the crazy thing to me is you said you're 24.
Yeah.
Right? Like I think I don't know about you, but when I imagine like things like HELLP syndrome and preeclampsia, like all these issues, like you kind of think of, I just think of more mature women having like people even women my age. Like I'm 34. Yeah, I'll still be 34 when I give birth. I'll be on the cusp of turning 35, which is geriatric. But for like it just shows like it can happen to anyone and like really listen to your body no matter how old you are.
Definitely. I did not expect any of this. Part of the reason why, I mean, I've always dreamt of having kids and getting married a little bit younger. And I always just knew that that's what would happen. I don't, again, like those weird things that I've always just, those gut feeling things. And so I think just like realizing how young I am and how young I was when that all happened. And that when I was looking at like, okay, what are the risk factors? Like, what did I do wrong? Like, I think I was looking into that, like, I think it was 6 months postpartum when I finally like started to really like dive deep. And it was basically everything that I wasn't. And I'm like, well, what the heck happened to my body? Like, what was going on?
Weird. Yeah, I just Googled what triggers HELLP syndrome. And it literally says, we don't know what causes HELLP syndrome. Mm-hmm. What? I'm sure you Googled the same thing. But totally. Like,
I got the same answers for both. And then also learning too, HELLP syndrome can be like 25% of it can be fatal for either. Or it's really, really not like a good thing to have and very, very hard for medical professionals to like, get you to a good spot. So I think like even just looking at that and realizing just how severe things were and how glad I am for what I have, even, you know, being 24.
Yeah. And it sounds like your provider, like she acted right away. Like she acted really appropriately. Like she was like, you're very sick. Here are your options. Let's do it. And I think when you're in that position too, it's very like, I remember for me, I was like, whatever gets this baby out healthy, like I just want him to be okay and me to be okay. Obviously, like whatever has to happen, like you kind of put your desires aside for the health of your baby.
Definitely. That's literally how I felt. It was this like out of body, like I wasn't making decisions really based on anything other than I want to be okay. And I want this baby to be okay. And I want everything to be okay. So anything to do for that, let's do it. Like I will do anything.
That is just wild. Okay. So then she was born. She was technically preemie then, right?
She was like in the, again, she was kind of in the cusp for it. So she was technically premature, but also wasn't. It was weird. So I just acted as if she was just early.
Yeah.
It was kind of my, you know, I just said she was early. She was fitting into all the premature clothing. And she was pretty tiny, but she's one of those babies that everybody always says like, oh yeah, my baby grows and they grow out of these clothes so quickly. And even with kids I've nannied for and been with, like same thing, but she like will sit in her clothes for a while. So I felt like I could kind of savor each, like the little clothes and the next clothes. And I was like, oh, this is really nice. And this is probably not going to happen for the next child if that, you know, if I decide to have another one, because babies tend to grow a lot quicker.
Yeah. So then what was the newborn stage like? Like, was it, and how was your recovery? Sorry. So how was recovery? And then what was the newborn stage like?
Yeah, recovery was, it was really bizarre not being able to like move my body because I did zero research on C-section. I just didn't really, I felt like it was, some people say that they don't want to do research on birth in general because like the over-researching element of them, they're like, I don't want to know. I'd rather not know.
That was me.
The other side. Yep. That's how I was with C-section. I'm like, I don't want to know. I don't want to see. I don't want to see the anything. I'm like, I get really squeamish. I'm like, I don't need to know. If it happens, it happens. And I just won't, I don't, blissfully unaware for that one. Yeah. So I think I just was very caught off guard with how I could not like sit up. Like I needed my husband's arm to like help me sit up or a nurse's arm. Anything and everything caused me so much pain. I remember sitting in the hospital bed and I looked at my arms and I was like, oh my gosh, these are my arms. Like my arms are back. Cause again, the swelling, I didn't realize that that was what was going on. I just thought, okay, pregnancy, weight gain, little swelling. I just assumed that's what it was. And so when I was looking at my arms, I'm like, oh my goodness, these, I haven't seen these in a while. So I kind of was having that like, oh my gosh moment. And it was, the recovery was definitely longer than I expected, but also I think I did pretty good with it. Like hearing other women's stories, I think I was able to recover fairly well. Again, I could not move very easily. Like it took me a while to feel comfortable walking. And even when I got home later, like I went so slow, like walking was just so painful. I mean, it's major surgery and they're cutting layers of muscle and everything. So your body is just really doing its best to just, you know, make sure that it can help heal that area. So yeah. I think when I got home, I was just so out of it and so in shock, but also so in love with it too. It was so bizarre. The newborn stage was in for me, I really loved it.
So cute.
I assumed like, you know, I just kind of put my mindset in, you know, if I wake up, I wake up, it's fine. Like I just had all of those things. And with the tools of having worked with very young kids, I mean, I've worked with very, very young kids too. And my sister, when she had her baby, I was living with her in my apartment too. So I had some experience with that.
So cute. Yeah. Love it.
It's very different, of course, because like the emotional element of things is just so strong. I think afterwards, the biggest thing that I struggled with was just the fear of death constantly. Like the fear of death was something that I just could not shake.
For you or for her?
For me, for anybody. Like for it was me or it was like a very irrational thing. Mm-hmm. I looked at her in her like little swaddle and I'm like, is this safe? Like is what about this could be more safe? Like I was just like so afraid. I'm even to her blanket, I'm like, the sheet around the bassinet mattress. I was like, is there something that I could do with this to make this more safe? And every single little thing that happened to either me or her, I was just so, so anxious about it. I was, because they were kind of, you know, mentioned that my blood pressure was still a little high, but it wasn't like at an alarming rate. So hearing that information, I basically like made myself think that I had preeclampsia again. Like I just kept constantly thinking that. I was on the phone with my mother-in-law and she had mentioned that her mom that lives kind of close to me has a blood pressure checker.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point I was like freaking out to my husband. I'm like, should I go in? Because I was just so afraid of something happening. And they I got the blood pressure checker and they checked it and it was normal. And it was so weird how like immediately just knowing that I had normal blood pressure helped so much. It was honestly a godsend to just be able to know, okay, I was just going a little insane. I mean, for lack of better words, I was just unable to relax until I knew that it was okay. And I think after getting out of those first few weeks, I finally felt, you know, even okay with her too. There were still, of course, those moments where I was like, is she breathing? Like, is she okay? Even still now, those thoughts definitely still creep in of like, we should go check on her. We should go make sure she's okay. You know, I feel that constantly still. There's something about it that when you're on that, like when you knock on death's door, your brain just is so afraid yet so and on guard to everything that it's really hard to let go and just try to enjoy your experience and enjoy your life, because especially being the age that I'm at, I've never experienced anything like that. So it just really surprised me and caught me off guard. And I think to this day, I'm still like, it was like a movie. Like, was that really my life?
Yeah. It sounds like you had a little bit of postpartum anxiety.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not a therapist. I can't diagnose it, but it sounds like just the fear, like overwhelming fear of death. Like that's something I went through too. Like I used to like just stay up all night, watch him sleep. I used to fret about the temperature. Like, is he too hot? Is he too cold? Is it better if he's too hot? Or is it better if he's too cold? Or we have the AC on. Is it too cold? Like, it was like so stressful. And like, it's so true. Like you did, like you were in a very serious situation, and it sounds like you didn't even get a chance to really process it all until you got home, like during the newborn stage. Like, so you are so brave. Like, what did you do to, like, did you talk to people about it? Did you, like, how are you able to manage that?
Yeah. So as far as how I've processed it, I think my husband was a huge help during that time. He ended up getting a few weeks off, which was awesome. And I think like, if that weren't the case, again, I think I wonder like how I would have done when I was, you know, home alone all day. And then the course at nights and everything like that. Of course, he was there to help too. And he was just like I think having like a really good support system, whether it's a partner, a friend, your mom, anybody that you can find to just like almost latch onto and just like have them to help make sure that you're just okay. There were so many moments where I just like would go to him and I was like, I feel like, am I dying? Like, I feel like I'm dying. Like, these are my symptoms of death. Like, here are all of these things. And he was like, you're okay. He's like, we can go get your blood pressure checked again if we need to. Like, we have these options, but I really do think you're okay. And I think that grounding was really helpful. I think too, like, as far as like the fear of with Violet, my daughter, after kind of really realizing, oh, she wasn't okay, I also started to fixate on her breathing because of that. And so I released, that was a huge anxiety portion of it too, of is she breathing okay? Is everything okay? And I think that was just trusting, like, this doesn't apply to everybody, but trusting my ability to take care of a baby was something I just had to keep in the back of my mind and use it as almost like a power of like, I've been working with babies, with kids for so long. Like, I know what I'm doing. And I think that's what made the process so much easier in my experience, because I had such good experience with kids. I think I had a lot of luck in that. And I had a lot less of like a culture shock of, oh, my time is being spent with this baby, with this child. It allowed me to really just kind of take care of both of us in like a healthy way without being like, oh, like, how do I take care of this person? I already kind of knew how to. And that I think really helped in my situation. So I think finding somebody too, who knows what they're doing, who's had, you know, a lot of babies, if that's something that you don't have experience in, can be really helpful, because you can kind of just trust them or yourself to really help you through those moments.
Yes. Wow. I so second that. Like, I remember just messaging even like mom acquaintance, like maybe like acquaintances I had at the gym on Instagram, like, hey, did you feel this? Like, a lot about the fear stuff. Like, I remember messaging this, like a friend, and being like, how do I know whether he's too hot or too cold? I don't know what to do. Like, I remember just, you need someone who's like been there before as almost like an anchor to like your crazy thought. I'm not saying intrusive and like thoughts that just snowball, because like, right. It starts with like, are they breathing? Oh, they're breathing. I remember my son, I don't know, he would breathe like so slow. Like, I don't know. I was like, oh my God, he's not breathing. Like, it was so weird. He was so quiet. I would like freak out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She was loud and her breathing was quicker. So that was my fear of like,
that was your
fear. Breathing so quickly. So I definitely can relate to that in like the opposite way, but in the same way at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Like, find your mom, like, group. It's hard sometimes. Like, I know a lot of women, like if they're the first in their friend group to have kids, it can be so hard, mm-hmm. but like social media is a great place. Like, and there's nothing, yeah. honestly, like I'll say most moms are so there to help other moms. Like there is like this like unspoken like support system, I feel like.
We really need it too. And I feel like there was something very primal about that. Like I felt this weird need to like find people and find women and find like this like tribe of people. And it was hard, like I'm in moments when I felt like I felt lonely because I, you know, I feel like there's really like a real, and this is not based on any science. This is just my theory. I feel like there's this real feeling of like, I need to find the moms. I need to find the people that like, I need support because I really don't think that we're meant to do this alone. I just don't. I think that's why so many moms, especially in America, suffer a lot with that postpartum depression because there's not that support system. Your grandmas are working. The moms are working. Everybody's busy. You don't really have that support that, you know, some places can have or that some people do get. I think even around the world too, you still have that lack of support with such a modern world when everybody's so go, mm-hmm. go, go.
Right. Like you're right. Like with globalization, like the era of like aunties and grandparents all living close by is like, so my family's Brazilian and I still have family in Brazil and my cousins recently had kids and I'm kind of jealous because all the aunties are there. And like, my mom was telling me that like my cousin's wife who just gave birth, like still plays soccer. And then like my auntie comes over her house and watches her baby, or they'll go to the club with her and watch her baby while she plays soccer. And I'm like, that is what's missing. Like it's hard. I think a lot of our families are like we're far away from our families and that's hard.
Yeah, that is really hard. I can't imagine like, especially, you know, wanting that so badly and being so happy for, you know, them to have that support, but also being like, oh man, that would be really cool if like had more of that support.
Yeah. I felt
similarly. My sister had her baby when she was 19 and I felt like there was a lot of support because, you know, she wasn't married and she like, of course she needed the support and everybody was really there to help support her. And so I was like, oh my goodness, like, you know, I was in this very scary situation. I was kind of like waiting for that support. And I think that's when I was like, okay, I guess I just need to find the support because I can't just sit here and wait and feel so lonely and feel so alone and feel insane, especially then going back to work alone with children all day. I needed to find other moms and other support groups, which is where like your podcast came in. And I was like, this is like the perfect thing.
Oh, yay. I love this.
Yeah.
Cute. Very, very, lots of thanks. Thank you. I actually just joined, like there's and I'm sure every area has this, like my county, like it's like my county name in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And it's like whatever county moms. And I just like, I'm sure like every area, like moms our age, like are trying to create these little pockets of support. So if you can join something like that, even if not every mom is your, you know, cup of tea, it's still like, you know, you still all have like, you're all still in it together. So you learn to put your differences aside for the common goal of being supportive of one another.
Yeah, it's really healthy. I think like there's even a statistic that women who have friends in their older age live longer. Like,
oh, wow. We just,
like being alone is not something that women, I feel like, enjoy. I mean, I like being alone, but the support of it all, I think, is like really important. So I think that's awesome that you were able to join that and have that community, especially, you know, being local, to potentially find somebody in your area to talk to and have that support.
Yeah, no, I know I like my alone time, but I also, it's so nice to be able to text someone and be like, do you want to come over for a glass of wine or whatever? Do you want to come over and like, let the kids play and I'll like order pizza? Like, it's just, I know we have our husbands, but we do, you're right. We crave that feminine energy. Like there's nothing can replace that like good old feminine tribal energy.
Totally.
And it's funny, I grew up a tomboy too, so I always had like guy friends, but like now into older age, obviously, like I think as a married person, it's like not weird, but like, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna go hang out with a group of dudes.
I totally get that. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, I've always just been more like of not like a loner, but I value those true good friendships because I struggled so much growing up to make those true good friendships.
Yeah.
And so I think like it's so nice when you can find those people and those women. And I mean, you're like you said, your husbands are great, but there's something about that experience that you can share with people that makes it so much better. I think if I were to give anybody advice, it would be like, trust your gut for sure. Like, trust your gut and find people to support you. You don't want to do this alone. You want to have that support. Even if it's like somebody who's super low key, that doesn't make you feel stressed. Cause I think that was another thing I learned is the non-stressful people are awesome. Like having non-stressful friends to talk to that you don't feel like you have to check yourself the whole time or feel like you have to like almost morph your personality or what you like to make sure that they feel okay. Like making sure to find people that are just stressful, that are really go with the flow, especially with young kids. It's so helpful. I would definitely recommend that for anybody.
Yes. Some people that you can be like your true authentic self, even though that sounds so corny and cliche. Yep. It's true, because like everyone has their own little personality. Like I know I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I think I'm like kind of quirky and crazy. And I probably like I text really annoying. Like I text, you know, I'm one of those people that texts like 1,000 times, but like one word. I'll be like, hello, how are you? Blah, 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 LOL. And, like, and the people get like 50. Like I'm like, I just can't help it. That's who I am. So
totally. Yeah, I have this. Yeah. I do the same thing. Oh my goodness.
That's funny.
I've decided to voice message people because I'm like, I can't like focus enough. I'm like, I'm going to voice message you.
I love it.
1 minute plus long message. Because this is
I do so that. Better. That's the best. And you know what? It's my favorite. When people send me long voice messages, I'm like, oh yeah. I like rub my hands together. Yeah. It's like turning on a podcast, but from like your best friend. So it's like.
Totally.
It's, you know, the tea is good if she's leaving you like a 12-minute voice message.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That would be if you're bad at texting, voice message people. I will say that is like I think finding like little moments in my day that I'm with a human being, it's to some capacity. And I love like the little control element of it too. Again, we talk about control, being able to kind of like decide, oh, I really want to send this message to somebody and I'm going to have this like conversation and then they're going to respond back and like to hear a human being's voice. It's really nice. It's really helpful. I love a good voice message.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And it's like, because sometimes as moms, like it's really hard to have a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a little friend group chat that we send voice messages to each other and literally it'll be like, hold on, my kid is screaming. Yep. And then we'll end a voice message. And because it's so it's like hard to be on the phone. It's voice message. That is the tea. Well, Brooke, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I'm so happy that you came on and that you messaged me to talk about HELP syndrome and your C-section and preeclampsia. Like what a wild story. And I hope that I know that people listening will get value from it, but I hope it also helped you to like kind of put it all together.
It definitely did. I really appreciate you letting me on and just being able to like tell this story, because I think when I was looking into it, I could not find anything. To be fair, it was a rare situation, but I couldn't find anything similar. And so it was really nice when you were like, yeah, come on, let's do this. And I'm like, okay, like, let's do this.
Yeah, I think you might have messaged me when I was like super busy and I was like, yes, here's my link, book.
Totally.
It's better to like, because you know, if you don't, you know, when you don't like answer a message and then you like forget about it forever, that's what I was afraid of. I was like, if I don't answer this now, it's gonna go into the black hole of my thoughts. So
totally.
Well, Brooke, thank you so much for being with us today. Did you want to share where everyone can connect with you? I don't know if your profile is public or private or
I have an Instagram account called The Gonzalez Home. I don't post as much on there anymore, but it is something that I find to be a lot of fun. So that's really all I have at the moment. I've kind of taken a break from social media since the YouTube, because, you know, it's just nice to be more present if I can, but there's always that little thought in the back of my mind that's like, start a podcast, start this, do that. And it's like, I've really always thought about doing it, but yeah.
Well, when you're ready and you want some help for podcast stuff, let me know. I'm an open book. I'm always happy to chat with people about starting their own stuff.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Everyone, thanks for listening. I will put everything in the show notes, including where you can connect with Brooke. Catch us back next week for the next episode.
Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, and if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!